Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Tresidder from NHS Somerset, and I'm joined by my colleague and friend,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP, and also from NHS Somerset.
And we're joined today by another colleague and friend, Dr. Juliet Balfour, who is a GP menopause specialist. Juliet, a very warm welcome to you today.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
And tell us, where does your interest in the menopause come from?
Well, I've been a GP for over 30 years now, and so I've always had an interest in women's health. And I'm old enough to be of the generation that I used to be giving HRT out to women because we knew it was good for heart health and bone health and people felt great on it. And then we had this massive study 20 years ago and everybody stopped taking HRT, and lots of women felt pretty awful. And so we then had the nice guidance that said that HRT was much safer than we thought it was. And so I wanted to learn a bit more about that. And so I started training as a menopause specialist back in 2018, just to learn what the current evidence was. And so I could make sure I was giving the right evidence to my patients. And yeah, it's just snowballed from there, really.
And it seems to be, doesn't it, that every 6 months or so, new guidelines come out saying, oh, it's a bit safer than we thought, or it's a bit more dangerous, we should prescribe it for a bit longer or a bit less long. What's the current state of play, please?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Things keep changing all the time. But really now, really from the NICE guidelines in 2015, for most women who start HRT under the age of 60 or within 10 years of their last period, for most women, the benefits of HRT actually outweigh the risks. So, which is a big change from sort of 20 years ago when it was either don't have HRT or take it for the shortest possible time and the lowest possible dose. So things have changed dramatically. There's a lot of myths about who can and can't have HRT. And unfortunately, a lot of us older GPs still remember the scary study 20 years ago and we remember some of the myths. And if we haven't done extra training, we potentially are denying women HRT when in fact they would really benefit from it. So part of my job now is educating patients, educating GPs, trying to get the current evidence out there. But we haven't got enough evidence. We need more research into women's health generally. So a lot of the things we actually haven't got definitive evidence for, so we just have to go with the general consensus amongst menopause specialists, gynecologists, oncologists, endocrinologists, and things do change, as you say, and newspaper headlines, they are culprits that frightening women, frightening doctors, and I've been writing, you know, part of some of these newspaper articles, and you get misquoted and the wrong thing comes out, so you need to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about, basically, who's abreast of the current evidence.
So just take me through, what is the menopause and how does it manifest, and are the symptoms that you're going to talk about only happening once your periods are finished, or what's the whole story as to what may come along?
So good question. So the menopause is just a retrospective diagnosis when you haven't had a natural period for a year. And the average age is about the age of 51, but between age 45 to 55, it is considered normal. But what we haven't talked about until recently is the perimenopause. And that is the time leading up to the last period. And that can last up to 10 years before your last period. So if 45 is still normal for your last period, that means some women are starting to get perimenopausal symptoms in their late 30s and lots of women in their early 40s. And a lot of women and a lot of doctors don't realise that you can start getting symptoms of lack of oestrogen and fluctuating oestrogen that early. And there's a myriad of different symptoms, sort of at least 34, lots more, depending on how you categorise them. And I tend to look at them in sort of physical symptoms and then the more psychological symptoms. So physical symptoms, obviously, everyone's heard of hot flushes and night sweats, but lots of women actually don't get those. So they don't get that obvious cue that something's going on. Periods can get longer, shorter, heavier, lighter, more spaced out more often. But then a lot of women are on hormonal contraception or the Mirena and they don't know what their natural periods are doing. So again, that's not a clue. But women can get palpitations, aching muscles, painful joints, everything dries up. So dry hair, dry eyes, dry ears, dry mouth, burning tongue, metallic taste in the mouth, dry skin, really itchy skin, dry vaginas, dry vulva, urinary symptoms, and we can talk a bit more about that if we have time. Lots of tinnitus, buzzing in the ear, all sorts of physical symptoms that often doctors don't necessarily think, it's the menopause. So we get women get palpitations, they get referred to a cardiologist, they get recurrent urinary infections, they get referred to a urologist, they get lots of aching, and they get referred to a rheumatologist and maybe get diagnosed with fibromyalgia. But a lot of those physical symptoms can actually go away with trying estrogen. And then almost even more important are the psychological symptoms, because a lot of women start getting those in their 40s. And they can be anxiety and depression and mood swings and irritability. And then you've got the brain fog and the lack of concentration and the terrible memory and forgetting people's names. And lots of women lose motivation. Their concentration goes. And one in 10 women who are working stop their job because of these types of menopausal symptoms, because they think they're getting dementia. They can't cope with their job, and they either demote themselves or resign or don't go for a promotion. So these psychological symptoms are really, really important to know about. And often, you may have probably heard now, obviously if a woman comes to a busy GP in her 40s and says, I'm not sleeping well, it's another symptom I didn't mention. A lot of people, some people get terrible sleep because of night sweats. Other women don't get night sweats, but they just wake up like a light switched on sort of 2 a.m. and they can't sleep for 2 hours before they get back to sleep, which is obviously really impacts on someone's day the next day. So all these symptoms, you know, make people give up work, and people, as I think, they're going mad. And they can be sorted out, you know, by giving back estrogen.
And it's really difficult, isn't it? I as a GP find it very difficult, because a lot of patients will come in and say, can I have a blood test to see if I'm going through the menopause? But perimenopausally, that's not actually particularly helpful, is it? Is that right? Is there some simple way we can be sure if somebody's symptoms are due to the menopause or perimenopause?
Good question, and no. So if patients are 45 or older and they've got classic menopausal symptoms, even if they've still got regular periods, NICE guidelines say we can go ahead and give a trial of HRT. And the great thing about HRT is you can try it, you know, try it for 3 months, see if it improves your symptoms. If it does, yeah, you've got your diagnosis. If it doesn't, you then have to start looking at other things. Under 45, it's slightly different. So we often try and get a hormonal, an FSH blood test if you're between 40 and 45. Sometimes 2 tests 6 weeks apart. But the important thing to remember with that is they might be completely normal, but it doesn't mean that you wouldn't benefit from a trial of HRT. So I see a lot of women who've got awful symptoms, but their FSH is normal. So they're told, you're not ready. It's not time for HRT for you. If women are under 40, that's called, now we call that premature ovarian insufficiency. And that's a really important diagnosis to make. And we do try and get blood tests for that, because there are lots of health implications. If you have a very early menopause, unfortunately, we know that you will have an increased risk of thinning of the bones, osteoporosis, and cardiovascular disease if you have a really early menopause, unless you go on HRT at least to the age of 51.
And you've mentioned that it's much safer than we used to think, but there are still a few patients, aren't there, who can't take HRT because of a medical condition like breast cancer. Are there things that can be done for their symptoms if they're unable to take HRT?
Absolutely. So that's the biggest group that can't have HRT are the women who've had breast cancer themselves, or have a very high risk because of their family history. But most women, because breast cancer is so common, most women will actually have someone in their family who's had breast cancer at an old age, and that isn't a contraindication. But certainly for those who've been to a family history clinic and got a very high risk, possibly we won't give it to them, and certainly people who've had breast cancer in the past. And we've got a whole lot of prescribable non-hormonal options that we can try for women, mainly to help with their hot flushes and night sweats. And there's a new type of drug coming out next year that's also going to be really good for these women. But the other really important thing to say is that actually local vaginal estrogen is safe for almost all women, including women who've had breast cancer. So I just touched briefly on the symptoms down below. So really important to know that a lot of women get dry, sore, itchy vagina and vulva, and sex can become really painful. And the bladder wall can become very thin and sensitive. So women have to rush to the loo. They sometimes leak if they don't get to the loo on time. They have to wake up at night to pass urine. They get frequent urinary tract infections. All those symptoms are awful for anyone. And they can sometimes be the first symptom you get in your 40s, or some women don't get those sort of symptoms till their 60s, 70s, 80s. But almost all women can have local vaginal estrogen, which is very low dose, but we put it in the vagina where it's needed, and that can really improve those symptoms. And breast cancer patients can have, almost all breast cancer patients can have those as well. There's one group of patients, if they're on something called an aromatase inhibitor, there's lots of controversy and debate about whether they can have vaginal estrogen or not. And sometimes we talk to the oncologists and work out with them whether it's an option or not.
That's a really helpful introduction to how everybody, or nearly all women, can be helped by local estrogens. But how about the more general symptoms with somebody who hasn't got contraindications, who's able to take HRT? What are the options available, and what sort of things might you do?
So just very briefly to say, lifestyle is incredibly important for every single woman. And as GPs, we often don't have time to give as much lifestyle advice as we want. But so it goes without saying that lifestyle is really, really important and can actually reduce hot flushes and night sweats. Sort of avoiding caffeine and spicy food and smoking and alcohol can really help with those sort of things. But yes, if someone's having lots of symptoms and wants to try HRT, there are two main components to HRT. The really important one for the symptom control and long-term health benefits is estrogen. We have estrogen receptors all over our body, and that's why estrogen affects all parts of our body, our brain and our body too. So estrogen is the most important thing. And nowadays we like to give it through the skin. So that's in a gel, a patch or a spray. And in fact, a lot of women who were previously told they couldn't have HRT can have HRT if it's through the skin. So that, for instance, women have migraine, and migraine actually commonly gets much worse in the perimenopause because migraine loves chaotic hormone levels, chaotic eating, chaotic sleeping makes migraine worse. So estrogen through the skin is safe for someone with migraine. It's safe for someone who's overweight or someone who has a high blood pressure or even has had a past history of a blood clot. We can still give estrogen through the skin. So there's a lot of women out there who have been thinking they can't have HRT, when in fact, all the new evidence and the newer products, you can have HRT, but you might need to be referred to a specialist to discuss that. So estrogen is the most important hormone. And if you still have a womb, a uterus, you also need a progesterone, because if you just have estrogen on its own, that can stimulate the lining of the womb and that can build and get thicker, and in rare cases develop abnormal cells and then go on to develop cancer of the lining of the womb. So it's really important to have the progesterone as well. And it's really important not to stop it because you don't like it, or every woman with a uterus needs both those hormones. And there's various different ways to take the progesterone element. And then there's a few women who've actually had a hysterectomy, so no womb. A few women, we also say actually need the progesterone as well. And that's for women who potentially they've had the womb out, but they've still got a bit of cervix left, or women who've got endometriosis and various other things like that. We would add in the progesterone. But for most women without a womb, they just have estrogen only.
And it varies, doesn't it, depending on how long ago you stopped having periods as to exactly what pills you take?
Yeah, so if you come to your doctor and your last natural period was over a year ago, you can go straight on what we call a combined regime, and that's estrogen every day and progesterone every day. And that's designed not to give you a bleed. But we always have to warn women, for the first few months you start HRT, you might get a bit of bleeding. So just quick word about postmenopausal bleeding. So if you're not on HRT and your period stopped over a year ago and you suddenly get a vaginal bleed, you need to talk to your doctor urgently. That's what we call a postmenopausal bleed. Completely different if you're on HRT. If you've just been started on HRT, the estrogen is building up the lining of the womb, the progesterone is trying to keep it thin, but often that doesn't get it quite right to start with. So don't worry if you get a bit of erratic bleeding the first few months of starting HRT and it settles down. We don't worry about that. Obviously, it keeps on going. We fiddle around with the HRT to try and stop it. But so that's combined HRT. And then if you wanted to start HRT and you're still getting periods, we put you on what we call sequential HRT, and that's estrogen all the time, but you just take the progesterone for half the month, and that's designed to still give you a regular monthly bleed. And then when you've been on that a year or two, or depending on your age and how you're doing with that, we aim to always eventually move people on to the continuous combined HRT, because that gives a really good protection against cancer of the uterus. And in fact, your risk of cancer of the uterus, the lining of the womb, is less on combined HRT than it would be on continuous combined HRT than it would be without not on HRT at all.
That's really clear. Thank you, Juliet. The other issue is that even within those different methods of delivery, there are lots of different products available, aren't there? How much does it matter which sort of HRT people take? If they don't get on with one, can they switch to another and get better? How important is that?
So important. And it is so individual. So it's incredible, how, having seen so many menopausal women, that the absorption of different products is so variable. So the estrogen through the skin comes in a patch, a gel, or a spray. Many of the people listening will know that there are awful shortages of these products at the moment, and some poor women are having to swap from one thing to another and go around lots of different chemists, or even some women are running out, which is a disaster, especially as we do find that, like, one woman will get on really well with a gel, whereas another woman will only get a good level of estrogen with a patch. And then there's different patches, and some people find some patches suit them better than others. And again, some people get on better with a spray, and it's a very individual thing on how well they're absorbing it. And then different people need different doses as well. So when you're perimenopausal, you might sometimes have your own ovaries working and erratically, so you'll have sort of peaks and troughs of estrogen. Things get a bit more steady when you're older. But some women will need the highest dose patch. Some women will only need a tiny patch. It is incredibly variable. And again, with the progesterone, it's variable how it suits people. Most people feel brilliant on the estrogen. The progesterone is variable. It's a bit of a marmite hormone with progesterone, because some people, it makes them feel calm and sleepy and they like it. Some people, it makes them feel moody and grotty and spotty and bloated, because progesterone is the PMT hormone. And that's why I said you've got to take some form of progesterone, and don't stop it just because you don't like it, because it's dangerous if you stop it. We've got two really good options for the progesterone side of HRT, the first line options. We've got the gold standard one is something called Utrogestan, which is a capsule you take at night. And that is a body identical progesterone. So it's made synthetically, but be made to be the same as the hormone you used to produce. And a lot of women get on well with that. Another really good option is the Mirena, which is the coil with progesterone in it. Doctors love that. And why doctors love that is it does three different things. So if you're still young enough to need contraception, and most people need contraception until they're 55, just to warn you. So Mirena can be your contraception, it can be your progesterone part of HRT, and if you're still having heavy periods, it can actually lessen and stop your periods. So that's why doctors are always plugging Mirena, but not everybody wants one, and that's absolutely fine. So we really like the Utrogestan, the Mirena, and then also we do have combined patches that have actually both hormones in, have estrogen and progesterone in as well. The progesterone is not quite so good. It's the synthetic progesterone, and it's not quite so good metabolically. And interestingly, it's the progesterone side of HRT that seems to have the slight increased risk of breast cancer. So that's why we like Utrogestan most, because it's got the least risk of breast cancer.
That's really, really helpful. And I had two questions about contraception. You've answered one of them already, which is just because you think you've passed the menopause doesn't mean that you don't need contraception for some time. And you and women can be fertile up until 55. The other question I wanted to ask, if I may, is let's say you're in your 40s and you're on oral contraception and you happen to be whatever it happens to be, does that postpone the menopause? Does it protect against the menopause? Does it cause difficulties with detecting the menopause? Does it interfere? What's the current thinking on that?
Okay, so just quickly about contraception before I frighten everybody. If you're not on anything hormonal and your periods stop below the age of 50, you have to have no periods for 2 years before you can be considered not fertile anymore. If your last period, if you're over the age of 50, you only have to wait a whole year. And if you haven't had a period for a whole year, you then know that you're not fertile anymore. But it does get very muddled because a lot of people are on the implant or the mini pill or the combined pill or the Mirena, and they don't know when their last natural period was. And for those women, they do have to keep on with contraception until they're 55. And then if people are low risk, we do have quite a lot of people on the combined pill in their 40s. And we also have lots of women on the mini pill, which is another good option for older women. And you would think that obviously the combined pill has got estrogen and progesterone in, and you'd think that those women wouldn't have menopausal symptoms. But in fact, they often do. It's a synthetic estrogen. And I do see quite a lot of people who come in on the combined pill, but in fact, they're getting hot flushes, night sweats, and we swap them over to HRT and they do much, much better. Women on the mini pill, it's only got progesterone in it. So it might stop people's periods, but it probably wouldn't stop the other menopausal symptoms because it hasn't got estrogen in. But we often swap people over from the combined pill to HRT, but also thinking they might still need contraception.
You've talked us through some of the complexities of menopause and the treatments available. Personally, I find it one of the most satisfying things to prescribe. There are very few other things where you write a prescription and somebody comes back a few weeks later and says, my life has been transformed. So I'm a great fan. I'm delighted that the safety has been vindicated recently. But it is complex to keep up with all the intricacies, isn't it? So are there more specialist services available that people can access? Or can the GPs sort everything?
Yeah, so a lot of GPs are very keen to learn more. And you know, lots of GPs are very up to date, which obviously you guys are by the sounds of it, which is fantastic. And there's a lot of GPs on waiting lists to go to specialised courses for training. They get very booked up now. So the British Menopause Society do courses and another primary care women's health forum do courses, and they often get very booked up. But lots of GPs want to do more training, but we can't possibly expect every GP to know everything about everything. It's, you know, we have to know a vast amount of stuff. So I wouldn't expect every GP to be able to prescribe in any situation, and that's why we need menopause specialists to refer to. So until recently, Somerset, Devon and Cornwall have not had a menopause specialist clinic. Cornwall did have one, a brilliant one, up till 2016, and then the funding was pulled. But then luckily, surprise, surprise, we managed to get funding for a one-year pilot for a specialist menopause clinic for Somerset, which really exciting. I'm absolutely thrilled that we managed to get that funding from the CCG, so we're very grateful to them. So in Somerset, there is a specialist menopause clinic, but it's only me. It's run by me. It's only me. So the resources are limited. But patients can ask their GPs to be referred. If they're complex, patients can be asked to be referred to see me. And we run the clinic from Glastonbury Surgery.
Really interesting. And do you do some of the training yourself as well of GPs in Somerset and elsewhere?
So I do a lot of stuff online, and we've got a program for GPs in Somerset, an education program, really starting in September, to do more face-to-face and online webinars to get the evidence out to the GPs. So we're working on that. Obviously, time is always an issue, but that very much part of my aim is to be able to educate GPs. And also, if I see somebody in the clinic, I write quite a detailed letter to explain to the GP why this patient can or can't have HRT. So every letter that I send is hopefully also, you know, part of that GP's education.
And do you have a long waiting list to be seen? If it's just you, and I imagine this podcast is going to make any waiting list that you do have even longer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're booking into October at the moment, but with quite a few people still to book in. And it is just a pilot. So the pilot finishes the end of February. And then we've got to evaluate it and try and get ongoing funding. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that this clearly it will save lots of money for the NHS, you know, in the future. But we've obviously got to try and prove that, and give them statistics to prove that. So yeah, we really want the clinic to carry on.
So if somebody has thought that they're having menopausal symptoms, maybe been told by their GP, sorry, we can't give it because of these contraindications, is it worth going back to them and saying, can I be referred to the clinic, or you know, what's the latest evidence? Can you look again? Is that worthwhile?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always suggest to people, obviously in every GP practice, there's some people are good at one thing, some people are good at other things. So I was a good person to see for menopause, but you wouldn't want me injecting one of your joints with steroid because I'm not very good at that. So it's always worth asking the receptionist who's got the biggest interest in women's health, who's got an interest in menopause. And you might find someone else in the same practice who's actually got enough specialist knowledge to help you. But if you can't, firstly, it's worth reading around the subject yourself. And I've got lots of resources on the Glastonbury Surgery website. There's a page for the Somerset NHS Menopause Service, and I've got suggested websites and lots of information on there for people to look at just to find out more information. But then if they want to speak to a specialist, you go back to GP, say, please can I be referred to the clinic? And what I do is I actually triage all the letters. So some people I can help by just writing back to the GP saying, yep, no, this is fine, use this HRT, this dose, here's the evidence, absolutely fine. So my aim is to do as much as possible via advice and guidance, because that's quicker than seeing the patients. But when it's a complex case, or somebody's had a past history of a hormone-dependent cancer, or lots of other illnesses, or had heart attacks or strokes, or more elderly and want to restart HRT, or just have tried everything and nothing's working, you'll be offered a face-to-face appointment at the surgery, and we can go through everything in detail and come up with a management plan, write that back to the GP, and then the GP should be able to prescribe for you.
Juliet, this sounds a great personalised service that you're able to offer, and it's fantastic. There are an awful lot of women in Somerset, and I just wonder what scope there is for group education or widening the knowledge for people.
Absolutely. So we've got another wonderful GP, Dr. Patrick, who's going to be doing webinars for patients. So basically you can sign up and you can listen to her talking, just going through the basics of HRT and some of the myths, and basically get educated so that then when you go and see your GP, you know what you're talking about and you know what to ask for. And that will make your GP's life a lot easier as well, because you're trying to do a starting HRT consultation in a 10-minute appointment is incredibly difficult, and actually it's impossible. So, you know, if a patient is very well educated, they know what they want, they know the issues, it's good for them, but it's also really good for your doctor, because they know that you, and they, if they know you've been to one of the Dr. Patrick's webinars, they'll know that you know the pros and cons, and then we just have to look at that person's individual benefit versus risk ratio and make a decision. So that's another resource. So we're trying to educate patients, educate doctors, and then have a clinic for complex patients. So hopefully we're covering all bases. But it, you know, it's a big job, as you say. There's a lot of women in Somerset. There's only me at the moment. But hopefully we can get ongoing funding and maybe expand the service a bit more.
Brilliant. And our producer, David, will put all of these details up at the end of the show so that people can access it. And I just hope you're not absolutely overwhelmed with people who are enthused by your podcast and want to get treatment for something that can be very, very disabling, as you've made very clear.
It can, and you're absolutely right. This is why I became a menopause specialist as well. It is so satisfying. You can turn people's lives around, and it's a lovely job to have. But yes, frustrating, because I know there's a lot of women out there who could benefit.
Well, Juliet, thank you very much for your passion, for your energy, for your medical expertise, and for your dedication to help the women of Somerset. So thank you very much indeed.
It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, hosted by Dr. Andrew Tresidder and Dr. Peter Bagshaw. The show was created by David Seeley and was produced by Rob Hunt's Music on behalf of the Somerset Clinical Commissioning Group.